This is your second live stream for the day. I am the Solid Monster. This is your Monday Night Raw review, the final Raw on the road to Money in the Bank coming up this Saturday in Toronto. We had two more Money in the Bank qualifying matches, one spot in the men's match and one spot in the women's match left to be decided. Those spots have now been filled, and we know that on the men's side, it was going to be Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, and Ilya Dragunov. When this match was announced last week, that instantly got my attention. I was very much looking forward to this main event, and they did not disappoint. They gave them time. It went through two commercial breaks. They beat the holy hell out of each other. But in the end, as predicted, the man going on to Toronto this weekend will be Drew McIntyre. He will be in the Money in the Bank match, which of course means that CM Punk is going to be lurking up north this weekend. Is it going to be in the ladder match? Is it going to be later on in the night? Because at the very end of the show tonight, we had McIntyre for the second week in a row, not only saying that he was going to win Money in the Bank, he is going to cash in and win the World Heavyweight Championship and leave Toronto as the champion on Saturday. He has made that promise. We had an excellent main event, though, on this show. We also had another Wyatt Six video. I went back and I watched the segment last week, the VHS tape with Bo Dallas and Uncle Howdy, and I picked up on a few things I didn't see the first time. It was really well done. I talked about it on the Sound Off this weekend. Very impressed with what they did with that segment last week. What I was hoping for this week is to get more videos like that, more therapy sessions, basically, with the other members of the Wyatt Six. So we get to know a little bit more each time about each member, why they're part of this group, what their motivation is, you know, what their feelings are about, what their mission is, all these different things. We didn't get that. Instead, we got another video. We got the continuation. We got part two of the video from last week with Uncle Howdy and Bo Dallas. And it was, again, very well done. I enjoyed the video. Again, nothing, they didn't break a lot of new ground. But there was one very important key element that came out of this video as far as what their motivation is, and a little hint as to who they may be targeting and who they may be going after going forward. So that was an important part of that segment. I guess we'll just have to wait and see if they do similar segments with the other members, but if they do, we didn't get that this week. We had a lot more hijinks with Liv Morgan and Dominic Mysterio. They were all over the show. And they have been all over their show now for weeks. And their segments do really well, especially on social media. So it's no surprise they would kind of flood the zone with Liv Morgan and Dominic Mysterio stuff. So we had more of that. We had more strife within the ranks of the Judgment Day as the cracks begin to show more and more each week. We actually got a WrestleMania rematch tonight between Rey and Dom. I'm kind of surprised they just threw it out there. I mean, they promoted it a week in advance, but it was only the second singles match between them, and they gave it away here tonight on TV. I mean, it will not be the last, obviously. But the segment that I also really enjoyed tonight, actually one of the segments I thought was among the highlights of the show tonight, involves Sami Zayn and Bron Breakker. They're squaring off this weekend for the Intercontinental title, and they had a face-to-face segment tonight. It resulted in Sami Zayn being left laying. But I thought that was a really strong segment. You know, one of the goals of these types of shows is to get people excited and to get people to want to tune in for the PLE coming up this weekend. And I thought that they did a good job of that. I was not a fan of every single segment on this show. There was some boring spots. It was a little harder to get through than maybe in the last few weeks. I still thought overall it was a strong show. And they did what they had to do as far as Money in the Bank, especially with that IC title segment. They got me very interested to see that match, and I was already interested anyway, but they got me interested to see what happens with Sami and Braun coming up this weekend. And keep in mind, by the way, for those who don't know, Money in the Bank on Saturday, they have a pre-show that starts at 5 o'clock, which is, I don't know why they need a two-hour pre-show. They don't have any matches on there. The actual event starts at 7 p.m. That's the new thing with WWE now. You know, AEW still starts at 8, so just to avoid any confusion, just be aware that show will begin at 7 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday. And of course, I will be here when it's over to go live on Saturday night talking Money in the Bank. But we're not talking Money in the Bank tonight. Tonight, we're talking about Monday Night Raw, July 1st, 2024. Hey, guys, it's a brand new month. We're starting off the new month. And this is the second stream of the day. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. Super chats are open. I'm going to unpause them here in a second. I also just want to point out that earlier today, I was live on YouTube this afternoon talking AEW Forbidden Door, which was last night here in New York at the UBS Arena. One of the matches people are going to be talking about when this year is over is that match right there. Swerve Strickland one-on-one in the main event with Will Ospreay for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Easily the best match of the night. One of the best matches that you will see all year. So if you want my full recap that went up live this afternoon, you can check that out when you are done here with the Raw recap. If that is something that you would like to check out, and I'm sure that you will all be very interested in some of my thoughts on some of those segments on the show. A lot more polarized feedback than I thought to that show, but I guess that's sort of par for the course with AEW lately. Got people who are either on one side or the other, and unfortunately they either carry the flag or they shit all over it, and it just seems these days there's not a whole lot in between, which kind of sucks, but that's the way it is with wrestling fans online. Row, row, Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
Look who's rowing.
Row, row, Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
We had Rowan. We had Eric Rowan on the show tonight. I'm going to talk about him in a second. Oh, boy.
I'm the learning tree.
Speaking of polarizing, that was one of the segments that I was referring to from last night's show. Oh boy, they're all out tonight. They're all out tonight. El Masse. Let's get into this here, and then we'll get into more of these. Because there was no Pat McAfee on the show. Second week in a row. He was missing in Indianapolis last week. Had a family emergency. Not on the show tonight. Michael Cole, Corey Graves, they sent their best wishes to him. For those who don't know, Pat's father-in-law passed away suddenly last Monday. So he will be back on the show next week. In his place, we had Corey Graves. And Corey Graves and Michael Cole usually work the PLEs anyway, so we've heard them together plenty of times. Jey Uso was out to open the show, coming through the concourse and then coming down through the crowd. The Fireflies were all out. Even danced with Michael Cole when he got down to ringside. He didn't really say much before he was interrupted by Chad Gable, who talked about how miraculous it was for him to overcome all of the obstacles, all of the things that have been thrown in front of him over these last several weeks. Obviously, he was attacked by the Wyatt family. He was left for dead. His family left him. The Alpha Academy turned their backs on him. And of course, he has qualified for Money in the Bank. On Saturday, he says he becomes master Money in the Bank. Jey asked him about the Wyatts, and Gable said he's not afraid of them. He said Jey should be, though. Jey's out here, he's stealing the Fireflies. And he said that unlike Gable, whose family left him, Jey turned his back on his family. So Jey said he doesn't want the Fireflies. He'll take the mosquitoes. He'll take the cockroaches. I don't know why you would want to do that. I don't want any of that shit. I have enough of that here as it is. Especially this time of year, forget about it. I'm usually all bitten up. Even here, indoors. They come indoors. They eat me alive. Fuck the mosquitoes. I have to sleep with, it's not really a bug zapper, but it's like a fluorescent lamp in my room. Try to catch as many of them as I can. I'm fighting a losing battle here. So anyway, he said he doesn't want the Fireflies anyway. He said they can have them. This all led to Gable striking him. They got in a fight. Jey went up top for the splash. Gable rolled out to the floor to safety. Or did he? Because as soon as he rolled outside the ring, we heard the Wyatt sound effects. And then the lights got turned out. We heard the piano chord playing. The ring started to fill with fog. The crowd chanted, "Holy shit!" And USA muted the audio every other second, which is honestly even more annoying than Fox. The only saving grace is USA doesn't black out the screen. So I'll still take USA over Fox, but this is still annoying when they do it. So Gable retreated into the crowd, but in the distance behind him, we see a blue light, and we see a shadowy figure. Now, we can't make out who it is. At first, I thought it was Howdy. I don't think it was. I think they had the different Funhouse characters placed throughout the building. So it was hard to tell exactly who it was, but he got spooked. So he ends up, you know, back on the stage area, and the entranceway is behind him. And again, we have the blue light. We have another shadowy figure. Clearly, this was Eric Rowan, you know, playing the role of Ramblin' Rabbit. So then he goes to the side of the stage. Again, more blue light and another shadowy figure. So Gable decides to head up the steps through the crowd, and he runs away. We cut back to ringside, though, and for the second week in a row, we see zombie Nikki Cross, and she has a box. She has a package. Not only does she have a package, but they're showing the announce desk. Michael Cole is standing up. Corey Graves is standing up. And again, there are two dead bodies laid out on the announce desk because they have security out there to guard them. You would think that after all of these times, when they hire security to do their job, and they're very bad at their job, that they would beef up security. Apparently, they have not learned their lesson because the two security guards were draped over the desk. They were unconscious. And so Nikki places the package on the desk. I love, by the way, how Jey Uso just vanished. We didn't see him again. That was the last we saw of Jey Uso for the rest of this segment and for the rest of this entire show. And he even said earlier that I don't want the Fireflies. They can have them. You know, he doesn't want to have any part of this. You know, he dipped out in the middle of all this. But this is the second time now in the last few weeks that the Wyatts have come out, you know, or the lights start getting turned out during a Jey Uso segment. And first time was when they made their debut a couple of weeks ago, and it was the same thing where Jey just disappeared. He got the hell out of there. This is the second time that that happened. Another thing I've noticed on these shows, again, it's been very apparent in this new era of new production and camera shots and all the things that we've seen. They've really taken to using the full arena on these shows, which I like. So they're not just at ringside, or sometimes they fight into the crowd a little bit and then they come back. They really, I mean, the arena has really become a living, breathing part of these shows. I've mentioned the gorilla position, right? We've seen the gorilla position more in the last probably 6 months or 9 months than I probably have all the years I've been a wrestling fan. Like, consistently. And that's just one area. That's just one part of the building. They've made the entire arena, whether it's a backstage segment where they're kind of following with that camera shot or, you know, up in the stands. Yeah, we had Jey Uso when he does his entrances and he's crowded by all the fans on the concourse and everything. And it's a great visual. But they really have made the arena. They've made these buildings, like I said, a living, breathing part of these shows every single week. More now than I think at any other point that I can remember. After the break, Cole said there was another VHS tape in the box. Like last week, they were sending it off to the truck to see if they can play it again. Like I said, the therapy session with Bo Dallas and Uncle Howdy last week was great stuff, and I was hoping they would do something like that, but with the other characters. We'll talk about what they did, though, later on. As the tape was being delivered to the production truck, we had our first match. Xavier Woods, one-on-one with Karrion Kross. Kross has spent weeks now trying to convince Woods to break away from Kofi Kingston. This guy doesn't care about you. This guy is holding you back. He's been a world champion. He's had all of these accomplishments. What have you had? You know, trying to convince him to break away, break free, and join the Final Testament. As if that would be a great big boon for his career, right? Because the New Day right now, you know, the New Day, there's not a whole lot going on with the New Day. The New Day's been there for 10 years. The New Day's not really doing much right now. But if you were going to make a move to try to better your career, I don't think that leaving the New Day to join the Final Testament is going to do what you think it is going to do. I can't even call it a lateral move. It's not even a lateral move. You're going from here to here. That would be a very poor career choice for Karrion Kross or for Xavier Woods to buy into what Karrion Kross is trying to sell him. So Woods went for a springboard finish, but Kross caught him in midair with a forearm shot on the way down. Kross took too long, though, to capitalize. Woods caught him with a small package and pinned him. AOP attacked New Day after the match as they were celebrating. Kross, he clubbed Kofi Kingston with a forearm. Meanwhile, outside the ring, AOP, they drove Woods into the barricade, so they took him out. And in the ring, Kross applied an arm submission to Kofi Kingston and was wrenching back on the arm for a very long period of time. And I was very surprised they didn't send referees into the ring. We've seen them every single week. We see them send referees to the ring for far less. This carried on for an uncomfortable period of time before finally one of the referees at ringside decided, hey, I better get in the ring. And he climbed in to try to put a stop to this. So they did Kofi dirty in his hometown. They were in Boston tonight. They were in Boston and they injured Kofi Kingston. I'm still waiting for them to do something interesting here with these guys. This story is just dragging along for me right now. They're very big on stories in WWE. They're telling a lot of different ones right now on this show. Chad Gable stuff with the Alpha Academy, the Wyatt Six, McIntyre and Punk, Balor and Priest, Liv and Dom. There's a lot going on this show. Rhea and Liv when she comes back. This story here, this is just, you know, it's just, I don't know what this is. It's not doing it for me. We need some kind of development here. We got a Judgment Day segment that started with Damian Priest and Dominic Mysterio in the hallway backstage, right outside their locker room. And as he has been doing now for weeks, Priest asked Dominic if everything was good with Rhea Ripley. And Dominic said, yep, everything is good. And Priest knew that he was lying through his teeth because he said that he actually just spoke to Rhea and she was pissed. So he got caught in a lie. Dom said he would handle the Liv Morgan situation. Priest said, you've been saying that for weeks. And still, you have not done anything to fix the Liv Morgan situation. So then as they were walking into the locker room, Dominic muttered under his breath. He said that Priest was starting to sound just like his dad. So they enter the room. They find Liv Morgan is hanging out with the other members of the gang playing WWE 2K24. Morgan then, she saw Priest. She said, oh, I gotta go. I got a women's world title match up next, but she wanted to wish Daddy Dom good luck ahead of his match with his deadbeat dad later in the show. So Finn Balor pulled Priest aside. Priest was not happy with Liv being there. And Balor said, she helped us regain the tag team titles last week. Balor said, the real issue here is not Liv Morgan. The real issue here is Damian Priest. And said that he didn't like what Priest said on the show last week when he had that in-ring segment with Seth Rollins and Priest made the comment, you know, because Rollins was stirring things up a little bit. You know, you need your friends to win your battles for you. And Priest made that comment about how they need me a lot more than I need them. And I said, that's going to come back to haunt this guy. It took 1 week and Finn Balor was not happy about it. So Balor was offended at the idea that Priest thought of them as just his sidekicks. Priest said he spoke the truth. He said he was the champion and they needed him. They were all there for Rhea Ripley the same way when she was champion. Priest said they needed each other. And Balor said that they were brothers and he would always tell him the truth. Balor told Priest, since you won that, and he pointed over at the world heavyweight title that was sitting on a table, on a podium. Ever since you won that world championship, you've changed. And Balor walked out. So things are breaking down a little bit more and a little bit more each week within the Judgment Day, between Balor and Priest in particular. The only question is, does Finn Balor cost him the title this weekend at Money in the Bank, which I don't think is going to happen. Or do they save it for SummerSlam? And when Priest loses the title there, it's because of Finn Balor. Whether it's, again, an accidental interference, because he's telling him, I don't want your help. Maybe Balor tries to help anyway, and it backfires, right? Unintentionally, it backfires. Or maybe it's intentional, and maybe he ends up costing him the title out of jealousy. Could go either way, but that's really the only question at this point. Does it happen this weekend, or does it happen at SummerSlam next month? I tend to think it'll happen at SummerSlam next month. We had Liv Morgan one-on-one with Zelina Vega for the Women's World Championship. This was Liv's first televised match in over a month since her steel cage match with Becky Lynch. Dominic walked out to the ring early on in the match, even though Zelina had said she didn't want his help, she didn't need his help. Dom's goal here was to fix things and cost Liv the title. That's why he came out. So Dominic coming out brought out Rey Mysterio, who followed behind him, and the crowd went crazy when they saw Rey come out. That took us to a commercial break. Morgan did the Three Amigos and then did Eddie Guerrero shimmy in the direction of Dom. Then she applied Rhea Ripley's standing cloverleaf, the prism lock. Vega, though, was able to fight out. Hit a moonsault for a near fall. They battled on the ropes. Vega hit a code red off the middle rope. She's a little tentative. It took a while for her to hit the move, but she hit it. And Vega then could not capitalize because Liv Morgan had the presence of mind to roll out to the floor, so she couldn't pin her. Meanwhile, on the outside, Dominic and Rey, they start arguing. Rey shoves Dom to the ground, right on his ass. Morgan, we don't see it, because they're not showing her in the ring. Rey is standing there looking down at Dom. Here comes Liv Morgan with a basement dropkick, a sliding dropkick. Knocks Rey Mysterio to the ground. Now Liv is in the ropes, and she's laughing, and she's smiling. And here comes Zelina Vega with a 619. And catches her right in the face. Follows that with a tornado DDT. Got a great near fall out of it. Everybody bought into it. Dom then grabbed the chair. And Dominic slides a chair into the ring right to Zelina. She looks at the chair. She looks over at Dom on the outside. Dom's telling her to use it. She picks up the chair. Dom's on the apron now. Picks up the chair, walks over, and just chucks it right at his head. And knocks him off the apron. She's looking down at him and she's yelling at him. Morgan, though, sees this. She gets pissed and she hits the ropes for the oblivion and then pins Zelina Vega to retain her women's world title. And Michael Cole on commentary once again calls Dominic an idiot. He tried to have Liv Morgan lose her championship. He tried to help Zelina Vega. It backfired yet again. So Cole is always calling him an idiot and calling him names anyway on commentary. So Dominic walks off. Liv is leaving kind of with him or like right behind him as if they're leaving together. He wants nothing to do with her. And she's like right, like a puppy dog. She's following right behind him. As he goes to the back, Kathy Kelly walks out on stage and stops Liv. Dom keeps walking. And she wants to interview Liv Morgan. And Morgan tells Kathy that she's the luckiest girl in the world and her revenge tour is going exactly as planned. She dedicated her victory tonight and all future victories to the most gorgeous man in WWE, Daddy Dom. The match itself was fine. The match itself was really nothing special. But what really enhanced it was the crowd. Crowd's liking this story. You know, when Dominic came out, he gets drowned out by boos. When Rey came out, they all came alive. When Rey shoved him down, again, big reaction. And then they bought into the near falls there towards the end. So the people were fully with this. The match itself, like I said, it was fine. It was really nothing out of the ordinary. But it was a fun segment because everybody was into it. Everybody was, you know, playing their part. Rey and Dom, they had a match coming up later in the show. Not the last time we would see Liv or Dom on this show. Again, they get multiple segments every single week. There's a reason why. Because their segments do well. Whether it's on TV or whether it's on YouTube or TikTok, This is why we're seeing so much of this story. And when Rhea Ripley is ready to come back, she's been gone long enough now, and they've really been building this up. When she comes back, forget about it. I can only imagine what kind of numbers those segments are going to do. Seth Rollins was shown walking in the back. In the background behind him as he was walking, you could see Zoe Stark having a conversation with Sonya Deville. Shayna Baszler entered the picture, dragged Zoe away. I just talked about this the other day, you know, with the Triple H era of WWE, we get this a lot. So when you have a backstage segment, somebody's being interviewed or walking down the hallway, you always got to pay attention because there's always going to be something going on in the background. We haven't even seen Sonya Deville on this show in many weeks. You know, she came back. We had a few segments with her and Zoe and Shayna. They still haven't really followed up on it. It's sort of just, literally, it's fallen into the background here. And I don't know, ultimately, if they're going to be a trio. I don't know if they're going to be a faction. I don't know. That's still playing itself out, I guess, right? Long-term booking. I don't know where that's going. But yes, that was going on in the background as Seth was walking. They also hyped up the WrestleMania 40 documentary, which finally, after how many months now has it been? The WrestleMania 40 documentary that was supposed to come out the week after WrestleMania. They announced it. They had a date for it. And then it was pulled. Here we are in July. It's finally coming out this Wednesday, 7 o'clock Eastern on YouTube, on their YouTube channel. I don't know how long it is. My guess would be it's got to be at least 90 minutes, if not 2 hours. Apparently, they had so much footage. That's part of what the delay was. They had so much footage to go through and deciding what do we want to use, what do we not want to use. They probably have enough footage to do a six-hour documentary if they want. I would think it ends up being about two, would be my guess. They showed the first 2 minutes of it, though. They aired the first 2 minutes of the documentary here. And Matthew, thank you for the sub. Welcome to the channel, brother. Let's talk about Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins, challenger for the World Heavyweight title this weekend, out to the ring for a promo. As he came out, there was a small amount of confetti, for whatever reason, that I guess was accidentally released. So it fell from the ceiling as he was standing in the ring. And without missing a beat, he said, oh, that's a sign. That's a sign because by this time next week, I'm going to be the World Heavyweight Champion. Rollins had a secret, he said, for Boston. He wanted to share it with them because this was a championship city. Said they have the Bruins, they have the Red Sox, they have the Patriots, and they have the 2024 NBA champion Boston Celtics. And the crowd, loud chants of Celtics. Kind of funny, you know, last night at Forbidden Door, during the Mercedes Moné match, we had a guy in the crowd wearing a Boston Celtics jersey. It got her booed, because she's from Boston, but it got him booed too, and it got chants of fuck the Celtics here in New York. That was last night. And tonight they're actually in Boston, and we get loud Celtics chants. So very interesting juxtaposition there between those two. Rollins' secret, he said, was that he needed to win back the World Heavyweight title. If he didn't win the title, he wouldn't get another shot as long as Damian Priest was the champion. Oh, horror! Oh, no! A whole 4 weeks! I'm so worried for him. So he can't be the champion as long as Priest has the title, if he loses. Rollins then, if that happened, he said, would have to reevaluate who he was. This man would have to reevaluate his entire life. But Rollins said he was at his best when the pressure was on. He said that he would take the title. He would also take Damian Priest away from the Judgment Day because that was the other stipulation. If Priest loses, he must leave the Judgment Day. He said it wasn't his intention to break up the Judgment Day, but he thought that Priest could be the best version of himself without them. And before Rollins could finish his thought, Finn Balor interrupted. Balor said that he should be in a good mood after just winning the tag team titles last week with JD McDonagh. But he's not. Said he was in a bad mood because everything seemed to be changing. Said the Judgment Day was changing, Damian Priest was changing, and he blamed Seth Rollins. He said, this is all Seth Rollins' fault. Rollins called Priest a grown man who made his own decisions, and Rollins said Balor was just mad because he's jealous that Priest won the World Heavyweight Championship and Balor couldn't. And Balor had a whole bunch of opportunities against Seth, too, right? It's not like he didn't have the chance to win the world title. He He had more than a few chances, and he failed. Damian Priest won. So, yeah, you can buy into the fact that maybe there's a little bit of jealousy going on there. Rollins wanted to fight Balor. Priest, though, came out and interrupted. Rollins thought this might be a trap. Priest said, "Does this look like a trap?" Priest got in the ring. He looked at Finn Balor and said that nobody was getting involved in his business. Rollins said, "Why wait until Saturday? Let's go at it right now." And Priest seemed open to the idea. He was ready to throw down. But before they could go at it, Finn Balor jumped Seth Rollins and took him down to the mat. Priest didn't like this, and he pulled Balor off. Rollins then knocked them both down with a single super kick. Rollins then gave Balor a curb stomp. Priest then gave Rollins, when he turned around, a South of Heaven chokeslam. Boy, he got this fucking guy way up. And chokeslammed him, laid him out, and Priest ended up helping Balor to his feet. You know, it's interesting. We're getting similar stories right now at the same time. You look in AEW, I just got done talking about Will Ospreay earlier this afternoon and that great match he had with Swerve Strickland. And there's a story that's playing itself out right now in AEW. And it's not the dominant story like it is here on Raw with these guys. But he's technically part of or affiliated with Don Callis and the Callis family. And of late, he's made comments to the effect of, "I don't need them. I don't want them. I don't need them to help me or help me fight my own battles." And Callis, you know, clearly has been offended by that. And they're going to have a split soon enough. Here, it's the same thing where Damian Priest all of a sudden is like, "I don't need you. I don't want you to help me. I'm not asking you for your help. I don't need you to fight my battles for me." And Finn Balor is offended by this. Like, what do you mean? Thought we were a team. You don't need my help. So it's a very similar type of story playing out on both shows right now. We had a Ludwig Kaiser video with new footage from Kaiser, who revealed, he confirmed what people were saying last week, that he was legitimately injured during his match with Bron Breakker. There was a spot during that match. It was after he got clotheslined. Breakker came off the apron with a clothesline onto the announce desk. And I think even before that, he was holding his ribs. And it was very clear that there was something bothering him with his ribs. But we didn't know if it was a rib injury. We didn't know if he got concussed, you know, when Sheamus came out and kneed him in the head. He revealed here he has broken ribs. And so he's going to be out for a little bit. But he said that his goal is not just beating Sheamus anymore. His goal is to embarrass and humiliate him and then end him once and for all. So hopefully they can get him back quickly. You know, he looked fine here in this promo, but, you know, broken ribs are a bitch. And so once those are healed, they'll get him back on TV. We had our first of two Money in the Bank triple threat qualifying matches on this show. First, it was the ladies. It was Dakota Kai. It was Zoe Stark. And it was Ivy Nile to fill the final spot in the ladder match on Saturday. This was mostly, honestly, the Ivy Nile showcase. At one point, she hit a double bulldog to both women off the ropes. At another point, she delivered a double German suplex to both ladies at the same time, which was impressive. Kairi Sane ran out to cause a distraction, but here comes Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, the women's tag team champions, to crickets. Nobody cared. They came out, took out Kairi. Zoe used the distraction to give Dakota a Z360 and pinned her. I thought this was a pretty average match. I thought they would give the last spot to Dakota Kai. I was actually surprised by that finish. I would say it was mildly surprised by that finish, because Zoe was actually in the Money in the Bank match last year. So it's not terribly surprising to see her be in Money in the Bank again this year. But I really thought they were going to send Dakota, if for no other reason, to maybe play up, you know, some dissension within Damage Control and work a spot in there where her and Io are going for the briefcase at the same time. I thought we would get a little bit of that in the ladder match, but that's not going to happen. Now, Zoe Stark fills the final spot in Money in the Bank. And then Michael Cole told us that it was time for the latest VHS tape from the Wyatt Six. And we were back to Bo Dallas and Uncle Howdy. This was a continuation from last week's segment, last week's therapy session, with Bo wanting to know here, how much longer are we going to keep doing this? So what are we even doing here? And Howdy asked Bo, honestly, if he believed that he brought... Now, I couldn't tell if he said that if he brought him to life, as in Howdy, like, do you believe you brought, like, Howdy to life? Or if he believed that he brought life to the other members of the Wyatt crew, because there were random glitches during the segment at different moments. So I couldn't quite make out what he was saying at this part. But Bo Dallas said that he was destined to do this. And Howdy asked Bo if he thinks that he's special. Dallas said that special implies that others are not and deserve to be forgotten. He said they are the ones everyone forgot and that everyone abandoned. And he said that they made people notice them. Howdy asked Bo, how do you believe you can bring them to life? Again, I think that's what he said. How do you believe you can bring them to life? And Dallas said they weren't chosen. They were just willing. Clay in the hands of the potter, dyed to the flesh to become something beautiful. They've become a family. We've become a family. And Dallas said, even now, the false prophets are berating and belittling their own family for their own gain. He said, it's disgusting and they must pay for their sins. Howdy asked Dallas if he thinks that this is his responsibility. And Bo said that he is the voice of the reckoning. Howdy said, he is the reckoning. And then both men simultaneously were saying the same thing at the same time. They said they are nobody. They gave them a family. They made them beautiful. And they are a family. So the tape glitched, and all of a sudden, Howdy was gone. And all we saw was Bo Dallas sitting in his chair. See the door in the background. Again, it looks to me like they're sitting in the Firefly Funhouse. That's the Funhouse door. I don't know. That's what it looks like to me. It's very dark in the room, so it's hard to tell for sure. But Dallas said he set them free, and after he said that, he then disappeared, and Uncle Howdy returned in the chair and said, there you are. And that was the end of the footage. So this was, I assume, this was the end of the therapy session involving Howdy and Bo. Unless there's a part three next week, I'm going to assume that this is the end of this portion of it. The key part here, again, it was very similar to what we saw last week with one key difference. The key passage here was Bo Dallas saying, even now the false prophets are berating and belittling their own family for their own gain. And then he called it disgusting and said that they must pay for their sins. That would explain why they've been going after Chad Gable. I mean, that explains Chad Gable's character to a T, right? And everything that's been going on with him and the Alpha Academy and the way he's been treating them. So that would explain that. And it also begs the question, who else could that be in reference to? That gives us a little bit of insight into who this group may be targeting and who they may be feuding with down the road. Jey Uso, right? Twice they've come out during a Jey Uso segment. Now, again, he's left. He's, you know, dipped out of there. We haven't seen him get beat up. We haven't seen him get confronted by them. But I don't think that's an accident. So Jey Uso is somebody who has broken away from his family. He was fighting his family at WrestleMania this year. He's fighting his brother at WrestleMania this year. And I wonder, because we all have the expectation that as this bloodline civil war plays itself out and we get Roman Reigns back, that eventually we're going to get Roman and the Usos. If not Roman, the Usos and Solo. Eventually reunite back on the same side to take on the new bloodline, right? And again, maybe Solo is not with them. Maybe he's still on the other side. But I just think for numbers sake, it would make more sense for Solo to eventually kind of lose control of Jacob Fatu and that side of the family and then migrate back to the OGs. But I wonder if this Uncle Howdy and this Wyatt stuff will factor into that in some way. If we know that Jey is going to reconcile with his family, and is going to reunite with Jimmy at some point, does this play a role in that? Does this play a role in convincing him? Because we don't know how this is going to play out, how long this is going to go on for. So I don't know. I don't know if maybe they will play a role in bringing the family back together. Then there's Dominic Mysterio. This could technically apply to him. Had a match with his dad on TV this week. He puts his dad down all the time, broke away from his family, joined a new family. So there's a few different avenues that they opened up here with that. Now that we know, you know, kind of the people that they are looking to go after, any of the people I just mentioned would really fit the bill. And maybe there's some I'm not even thinking of, you know, that are on the roster right now who betrayed a friend or a family member that I'm not thinking of. I mean, that could apply to Damian Priest if the Judgment Day split goes through soon, which it looks like it will. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention here, and I noticed it a little bit last week, but I really noticed it here in this tape. I know they were brothers, so you expect there to be some kind of resemblance. But even so, listening to Bo Dallas in these segments, and especially the one here tonight, it is eerie how much he speaks like his brother and sounds like his brother when he's cutting these promos. There were parts of this where if I would have closed my eyes and I didn't know any better, I would have sworn I was listening to Bray Wyatt. It really hit me just listening to him here in this segment, how similar. Yeah, the cadence and the voice and even some of his mannerisms here. You know, it's one thing, I know they're brothers, but very, very eerie just watching it play out here. So Otis was shown in catering. He had two plates. He was shown in catering. Chad Gable sits down next to him. And he was worried that new Wyatt video was directed at him. And Gable said, look, I need help. He said he knows the awful things he said. They were hurtful. And he knows that Otis hates him. And Otis said that, look, I don't hate you. But we're not going to help you. Because this has nothing to do with us. This is all on you. Basically, leave them out of it. It has nothing to do with them. It's not their problem. And Gable said, Otis was right, but hey, who's to say that they won't come after you? They won't come after Maxine. They won't come after Tozawa at some point. Gable said that he would be there for them if that happens, and then said that Otis was his number one guy. Tozawa comes over, Maxine comes over and asks Otis, is everything okay here? And Gable said that everything was great, and he walked away. Left Otis with something to ponder. Michael Cole on commentary is saying he hopes Otis doesn't fall for it. So are we heading, because there was a point, I've gone through so many, different scenarios for Chad Gable coming out of Money in the Bank and going into SummerSlam. I was holding out a smidgen of hope up until a few weeks ago. He was still going to end up with the Intercontinental title. I've all but given up on that. I don't think it's going to happen. And I don't think he's going to win Money in the Bank. So now he's wrapped up in this Wyatt stuff, and I'm looking ahead to SummerSlam, and it doesn't look like he's challenging for any championships. It looks to me, and I wonder, because again, he now is putting the onus on Otis, to make a decision here about whether or not he wants to forgive Chad Gable for all the awful things that he said and done. Are we going to end up with Chad Gable reunited with Otis and Tozawa? Are we going to end up with the Alpha Academy against the Wyatt Six? You know, could we see Otis and Tozawa and Gable against Dexter and Gacy and Rowan or some combination of these guys in a tag match at SummerSlam? Or are we going to get Chad Gable one-on-one with Uncle Howdy? It looks like he's going to have some tie-in with them at SummerSlam if I had to venture a guess. If he's going to have a match at SummerSlam, it's probably going to involve the Wyatt Six. And not the Intercontinental or any other title. And I am still waiting on the Creed brothers to turn. Meanwhile, they were just announced for Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. Bloodsport is coming here to Brooklyn on July 28th. Julius Creed and Brutus Creed on their way to Bloodsport. Just made the announcement earlier tonight. It seems to me like that would be the perfect fit for them. I think they'll excel on that show. I think they'll do well. And we had Rey Mysterio one-on-one with Dominic Mysterio, a rematch from last year's WrestleMania. Of course, we got a Liv Morgan run-in. She came out as Rey was setting up for some move on the ropes. Dom countered into a single leg crab. Ray got a rope break. Ray set up for the 619. Liv, though, pulled Dom out of the ring to safety. Ray then hits a basement drop kick to his son, knocks Dominic on top of Liv Morgan. And he is now laying on top of this woman, and Liv Morgan is absolutely delighted by this. As she looks up into the eyes of her lover boy, right? Her, what does she call him? Daddy Dom or whatever? So Liv Morgan is very happy about Dominic being in this compromising position. Now, he's trying to get away. Now, I have to say, he didn't exactly rush to get off of her. He was taking a few seconds to probably cop a feel and enjoy himself. So then he tries to get away, and she's holding him. Now, he's mounting her. Okay, he's basically straddling this woman, and she's holding him in place. And of course, oh, I'm powerless to do anything about it. I can't move, right? She's got me. Yeah. This guy's having the time of his fucking life. Meanwhile, his father is there to cock block him, and he comes over and he pulls Dom off of her, throws him into the ring, and tells Liv to leave. Here comes Zelina Vega back out. She attacks Liv Morgan. Dominic drops Ray, hits a 619. Dom goes to the top, but the brawl between Zelina and Liv, they end up on the apron. And somebody got knocked down and knocked into the rope. Anyway, Dominic ends up getting crotched on the top rope. Not the first time he's been crotched here in this segment, but he gets crotched on the top rope by accident. Now, mind you, I have to point this out too. All of this is going on. Everything I just described on the outside and him landing on top of Liv and now this and him getting crotched, all of this is going on in full view of the referee. And the referee is just watching this. He is just watching this all play out. No disqualification, no warnings, no ejections, no nothing. Ray drops Dominic with a 619, hits a springboard splash, and he gets the pin. After the match, Morgan is apologizing to Dominic profusely and says she'll fix it. She didn't want him to be mad. And he leaves and goes to the back. It was not their WrestleMania match. I wasn't expecting it to be. I still enjoyed it despite all the silliness here at the end. And it will not be the last time that we get Ray and Dom in the ring, I think, in the next year. One of these days, we're going to have to get mask versus hair. It's got to happen. I actually think that would be the perfect send-off for Rey Mysterio. When the time comes and he is ready to call it quits and retire, I think it would be very appropriate for him to lose to Dominic and lose his mask. Once he knows he's done, then it's safe to pull the mask off. I know the mask is still very marketable, and I mean, it's not like he has gone his entire career with the mask and he's never lost it before. If he was ever going to lose it, though, I feel like he should lose it to Dom. Because this is the second time Ray has beaten Dom now. At some point, he's got to put his son over. That's going to be weird. You know, every time they wrestle, it's always Ray going over on Dom. So I think that would be a very appropriate way for him to end his career when the time comes that he's ready for that to happen. But hey, you know, Ray is still going strong. What is he, 49 now, right? I think he's going on 50. Still going strong. He's been able to stay healthy lately. Hopefully it continues. Sami Zayn was out to the ring next for a promo to talk about his Intercontinental title defense on Saturday against Bron Breakker. Sami said that he's not stupid. He said he hears the buzz and he hears everybody thinking that Bron Breakker is going to run right through him at Money in the Bank, and he gets it, because Breakker is strong as hell, he's fast as hell. Sami declared with great conviction in his voice that he will beat Bron Breakker at Money in the Bank. That brought out Bron Breakker and his generic music. He got in the ring, he told Sami that he gained a little bit of respect for him last week, because everyone backstage is afraid of him. When they see him coming, they turn, they go the other way. They turn, go in the opposite direction, but not Sami. Said, in fact, Sami is the one who offered him a title match. And he said that means one of two things. Or it means two things. One, he has guts. And two, he has no idea what he's in for. Breakker said that respect goes out the window on Saturday. He said he's going to decimate Sami and win the title. Sammy asked him if he knows how many guys have said something similar to him. He said it's happened 1,000 times, and he's put himself back together 1,000 times. He said he gets back up every single time, and this title, and he held it up, said this title is proof. You know what? A lot of people didn't give him a chance at WrestleMania. They didn't think that they would beat Gunther yet. I didn't think they were going to beat Gunther at WrestleMania this year. They told the underdog story with Sammy, and Sammy got to be the first person to beat him on the main roster. So, like, even not only in kayfabe, but even, like, just in the context of the show itself, I think a lot of people counted him out and didn't think he was walking out of WrestleMania with that title, and had Gunther in their predictions, who looked pretty stupid when that match was over. Sammy said that if he had to stand in the ring and tell Breaker who he is, then maybe Breaker hasn't done his homework and isn't as smart as he thinks he is. He said maybe that means Breaker isn't as good as he thinks he is. Breaker dropped the mic and teased leaving. Then he turned around real quick and he speared the hell out of Sami Zayn. Like, just full speed, boom, takes this guy down. So he leaves the ring. It looks like that's where the segment is going to end. Sammy rolls out of the ring. Now he's on the opposite side by the announcers. He's standing up. He's holding his ribs. Braun is in the aisle, and he's looking, and he smiles. And it's like, oh, you could see, right? The gears going in his head. You could see what's coming. He starts to round the bend, and we get that overhead camera shot, right? The same one that they used a few weeks ago when he broke Ludwig Kaiser in half. He rounds the ring. Sammy sees him coming. Sammy does a leapfrog. And Braun goes under him and crashes shoulder first into the ring steps. Back in the ring, Sammy hit an exploder in the corner. He's setting up for the Helluva kick. Breaker, though, catches him with another wicked spear. Cuts this guy down. And then stands over Sammy, posing with the Intercontinental title to close out the segment. This was a very good segment. And I am very much looking forward to this match this weekend. I don't think Braun is winning the title. I said that. I mean, I feel that way, especially now, given the way this segment closed. But, you know, I did my predictions this weekend, and I said the same thing. I think he'll likely end up getting the belt, possibly at SummerSlam. I think they may do a triple threat or a fatal four-way. You know, we'll see if they can get Ludwig Kaiser back for that. But I don't see it happening this weekend. Feels too soon. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger on it. I could see some sort of a flash pin. So he's not going to kick him in the face and just pin him 1-2-3 clean with his finish. But again, something where Braun maybe gets a little cocky, makes one mistake. Sammy capitalizes on that. He makes him pay for it. Braun is just beside himself. You know, he's enraged. He can't believe that he made a mistake and he got pinned. Something like that is what I'm expecting this weekend. I don't think they're going to do the title change just yet. Kathy Kelly was in the back. She wanted to interview Damage Control about Money in the Bank. Dakota said they were still focused on Io Sky winning the ladder match. She was also sick of everybody getting involved in their business. And at that moment, Lyra Valkyria walked in. I don't know if it was her hair. I don't know if it was what she was wearing. She looked a little different this week. She looked good. Not to say she doesn't look good otherwise, but I don't know. It was a bit of a new look for Lyra. I think it works for her. She was looking real good here on the show tonight. But she walks in, and she tells Dakota that you can't climb the ladder for Io, right? You can't climb the ladder for her. She said that she's going to win the briefcase, and then Caden Carter and Katana Chance came into camera frame. They attacked Damage Control. Big brawl broke out. And a bunch of officials appeared out of nowhere to intervene and try to stop it. They replayed the Bloodline acknowledgement ceremony from SmackDown on Friday Night. Highlights, not the entire segment. But we got highlights of that segment. Which, if you didn't see it, or if you didn't see my SmackDown review on Friday, the best, in my opinion, the single best on-screen performance of Paul Heyman's career during that segment on Friday. Just from the way he was acting at the beginning of the show all the way to the very end, and the bloodshot eyes and the scruff and him just being all nervous and all dejected. And he does this a lot every week, really, ever since WrestleMania. But it kind of all built to this one moment where he stood his ground and he said that you are not my tribal chief, is what he said to Solo Sikoa. And then he paid the price for it. He got spiked, got a flying headbutt from Jacob Fatu, and they gave him the Shield triple powerbomb through the announce desk. And he took a pretty hellacious bump. You know, for a guy that shouldn't be taking bumps, he's not a wrestler, he's not an athlete, 58 years old. He took a hell of a bump. I mean, kudos to him for taking one for the team. I thought that was just an outstanding segment. And as far as Heyman is concerned, as good as anything I think that he's been involved in on screen his entire career in wrestling. I just thought it was fantastic. And it's gotten me now fully invested back in this Bloodline story when they were losing me. You know, it was starting to do just the sameness to a lot of these segments. And look, it could get very dull. You know, you don't have Roman Reigns. You don't have The Rock. I was waiting and waiting and waiting for Fatu to debut. I didn't know when he was going to debut. And sometimes when they don't really have a lot of interesting things to say, it can just be very dull. And you're waiting for that next chapter to come. Well, we got the next development on Friday in that story. And it was great. Speaking of great, that brings us to the main event here on this show, which was a triple threat qualifying match to fill the final spot in the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, and Ilya Dragunov. This right here is what I was hoping for when they announced this match last week. A physical match with some great wrestling, some great near falls, and a hot crowd that was making a lot of noise. Like I said, buying into a lot of the near falls. This was great. McIntyre and Sheamus, you know, they've been there so many times. We've seen them against each other so many times. We've seen them in these main event spots against other people so many times. This is still new for Ilya Dragunov. I mean, he was the man in NXT UK, and even in NXT, he was the guy. On the main roster so far, he's had, I think, one or two main events, right? I think when he wrestled Jey Uso, that was the main event. But he's still new to this position on the main roster. People are still getting acquainted with him. They're still getting used to him. He hasn't really had a lot of time to shine. And I'm sure there are going to be people who are upset that he didn't win. Oh, they beat him again. Now he's lost like three times or whatever it's been. And there are going to be people who think he's buried. They'll throw that word around, you know. Oh, he's buried. He's buried, right? Whatever. Just laugh and move on. Laugh at these people and their foolishness and move on. The fact is, Ilya Dragunov, based on reports, was not even supposed to be in this match. Ilya Dragunov was a substitute. You talk about last minute. They announced this last week, the same night that Ludwig Kaiser got hurt. It was going to be Kaiser, Sheamus, and Drew. So it was a very quick substitution. It made the match better, but he was the substitution, which means they never planned on him going to Money in the Bank in the first place. You should have known that going into this match. I don't understand why people would be upset about that. Not only was he never going to win this match to begin with, but he went in here and he got a lot of shine against these two guys. He was not a background player. He was not cast aside like he was less than. He was on the level with these other two. They gave it to him. He would give it right back to them. And they gave these guys a lot of time, too. This match went almost 20 minutes. There was a Tower of Doom spot with Dragunov on the bottom, and Sheamus took the superplex from the top. McIntyre went for a Claymore kick. Dragunov cut him off with the Torpedo Moscow. McIntyre rolled out of the ring, though, so he couldn't be pinned. Dragunov went for a coast-to-coast dropkick on Sheamus, and they used the overhead camera angle for it. He goes for the coast-to-coast, and Sheamus in midair cuts him down with a knee strike, which I think Cole called a brogue. It wasn't a brogue, but he caught him with a knee. Then he followed that with a brogue kick, went for the pin. McIntyre pulled Dragunov, though, out of the ring to save the match. And McIntyre took Dragunov. He threw him over the barricade into the timekeeper's area. He turns his attention back to Sheamus, who's on his knees in the ring, and he is burning a hole Drew McIntyre on the outside, and Sheamus is pissed. So we have an angry Sheamus now, locks eyes with McIntyre, who climbs back into the ring. And the two of them begin to exchange blows back and forth. McIntyre dodged a brogue kick, got a schoolboy for two. Sheamus hit a knee strike. McIntyre came right back instantly with a claymore kick. Covered him and got the 1-2-3. So, not only did Dragunov look strong in this match, which he did, they didn't even pin him. That surprised me. I was expecting that he was going to eat the pin. They got him out of the way. It was Sheamus who got pinned, not Dragunov. So again, if anybody is upset that he didn't win, like if you're a fan of his, I can understand it. And of course, any match that Ilya Dragunov is going to be in, he's only going to enhance it. But he was never going to win this match to begin with. I'm just glad we got to see it because we got a great fucking main event on this show. And anytime you can get Ilya Dragunov in the main event, it just gives him that much more credibility because it tells people, like, this is a guy that you should take seriously in this spot. And the more they do that, the more he'll get over because he just has this natural ability, has this natural charisma about him. I mean, in the first match he had in the, I guess it was the King of the Ring with Ricochet, he got over in his first match. I mean, he had a match before the draft. I don't even count that. That was with Nakamura. I look at the Ricochet match as his first match. He got over on night one. He's going to be just fine. Kathy Kelly interviewed Drew McIntyre in the ring after the match. McIntyre said, "I told you I was going to win this war, and that's exactly what I did. You ready for some more truth?" He said, "I'm walking into Money in the Bank this Saturday, and I am leaving Toronto, the world heavyweight champion." He then put CM Punk's bracelet with his wife and dog's name on it. Punk's wife and dog. Put Punk's bracelet on his wrist and kissed it to close the show. So an excellent main event, as expected. A little heavy-handed there at the end. Really, making it obvious that Punk is going to screw this man over on Saturday in some form. Again, it's only a matter of whether it happens during the ladder match or whether it happens, they let him win, and then it happens during the cash-in later. This is the men's Money in the Bank men's lineup. Not women's. Drew McIntyre, Jey Uso, Chad Gable, LA Knight, Andrade, and Carmelo Hayes. And based on what they did on SmackDown last week, I am convinced that Logan Paul is going to get involved in some way, and he's going to make sure that LA Knight does not win Money in the Bank. He's going to screw LA Knight out of the Money in the Bank briefcase. Whether it's a push the guy off the ladder type of thing, or brawl with him to the back, and we never see him again. However they do it, he is going to make sure that LA Knight does not win that title. I don't think that you do the same angle twice in the same match. If LA Knight is going to be screwed in that match, Drew McIntyre should not be screwed in that match. You can do that later in the show, but I wouldn't do it twice in the same match. And that's one of the reasons why I'm going with Drew McIntyre to win Money in the Bank. They've already told you. He's already told you in these promos. He's going to leave the World Heavyweight Champion. If that match opens the show, for sure, he's winning the briefcase. They open the show with that, and they close the show with Rollins and Priest. Or really, they could put that match on even second to last, I guess. It wouldn't matter. But if that's the order of things, if men's Money in the Bank comes first, McIntyre is going to win that briefcase. And Drew McIntyre is going to go on to cash in Money in the Bank later that night, probably during the match, mid-match. And he is going to lose. And he's going to lose because CM Punk is going to fuck him over. He's going to come back and get his revenge for what was done to him on SmackDown a few weeks ago and for Drew McIntyre taking that bracelet away from him. That's a piece of him. That's a piece of his family. He made it personal. Punk is going to make it personal right back. He's going to cost this man the World Heavyweight title for the third time this year. The third time since WrestleMania. And that will light the fire that will take us into SummerSlam and the first match, assuming he's cleared by then, between CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. I don't care if people are upset about the idea. Well, then it's a failed cash-in. You know, what a waste of the money in the bank briefcase if you're just going to have him win it and then he's going to lose it that night. First of all, it's a tired fucking concept anyway, number one. And number two, you got two briefcases. So even if they burn through the men's one in one night, you still got the women's briefcase, okay? So you're going to have a briefcase coming out of the show no matter what. I don't care. If they burn through the men's briefcase on this show, I don't give a shit. That's fine with me. Damian Priest was carrying that briefcase around for almost a full year. So this year, if they want to shoot an angle where somebody tries to cash in that same night and loses, I don't have a problem with that. You know why? Because it fits perfectly into the story. The bigger story here is CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. And as personal as it already is, and Drew's already been screwed over twice, one more time, and that takes us to SummerSlam. I have no problem with that. So it was another strong show in a string of strong shows they've had recently, including SmackDown. So WWE's been on a roll lately. There were some boring parts, but yeah, the important parts I thought delivered. And I thought they did a good job as far as the final hype going into Money in the Bank. I'm looking forward to the show this weekend, which, again, 7 o'clock Eastern Star, not 8 o'clock. Just keep that in mind. What did you think of the Go Home Raw to Money in the Bank? According to the Twitter poll, 76% of you say this was a thumbs up show, 15% thumbs in the middle, 9% thumbs down. And that is with 1,000 votes in so far and counting. So at SolomonStr is where you can go vote. That is the place to go, but you already knew that. You already knew that. Hey, Daniel Malcolm, thank you for the $4.99. Thank you, brother. And Hoffenheim as well. Yeah, I mean, again, Money in the Bank, I know why they still do it, because there are people who are still excited by the gimmick and it sells well. It's one of their bigger shows of the year, so they're going to continue to do it. I just think it's such a tired concept. If they wanted to give it a rest for a year, they're not going to do it, but you get no argument out of me. I'd be totally fine with that. Think about it. They've been doing Money in the Bank now since 2005. And it's a long time. That is a long time. All right. Let's see here. Where are we going here? Let's take a look at your messages. We are going to kick things off here with Skywalker. And Skywalker says, Happy Bobby Bonilla Day. Yes, it is a national holiday today. Or I guess now it's July 2nd. But it was on July 1st. Bobby Bonilla Day. That man gets paid every year. Doesn't have to do anything. All he has to do is walk to the mailbox, pick up his check. He doesn't have to care in the world. We should all be so lucky as Bobby Bonilla. Hypercam with 5. Is Judgment Day supposed to be presented like teenagers when hanging around the clubhouse? Makes me think of Undertaker's soft backstage comment. What gave it away? Was it the video games and the dartboard? Yes. That's exactly the idea. Josh Carlo, you mean to tell me that The Undertaker, if he was still on the active roster, would not enter the Judgment Day clubhouse? Josh Carlos, bigger liar, Russo or Hogan? You know, it's hard to tell. Because everything out of their mouths is bullshit. Hogan's older, and Hogan's been telling lies for longer. So I gotta go Hogan. The Winston Slip, Happy Canada Day. Says, thank you. 2 streams today, eh? Yes, eh. Two streams today. Keeping busy. You guys are keeping me busy. Josh Carlos, where does Sheamus' 2009 rank among the best first years? He had a really good first year. I don't really think of it as like an all-timer year. You know, when I think of great or like best first years, I think of Kurt Angle. I think of Brock Lesnar. Those are really the two I think of, you know, more than anybody else. Everybody else is just sort of a distant third. I always think of Brock and Kurt. I don't really think of Sheamus as being among the like top five best first years ever. But I mean, he had a really good first year. Give me back shots, Solomonster. Can you imagine the round robin of matches with Fatu, Braun, Oba, Gunther, and Ilya in the next couple of years? Gonna be some incredible feuds. You want meat madness? There's your meat madness. Theodore Bond, given their careers, do you think Marty Jannetty was also the Marty Jannetty of the New Rockers? It's an interesting way of putting it. I guess he would be. I mean, Al Snow was pretty over with Head during the Attitude Era. I guess he would be. Crow Feather Media. Does anyone remember the YouTube channel Meat Sleep? It was rumored the channel was owned by a serial killer. The Wyatt Six video reminds me so much of it. I mean, that sounds like something that would be right up my alley, something creepy. I've never heard of Meat Sleep before. I've heard of the back rooms. I've not heard of Meat Sleep. The Real CS with 1999. Thank you, brother. Corey Brennan from Fightful is apparently pissed that Ilya didn't win. Like that's his fault if he believed that someone who wasn't even supposed to be in the match to begin with was supposed to win the match. Well, I don't have his tweets in front of me. I'm just going by what you're telling me. But yeah, that would be pretty fucking dumb to be upset about that. Again, I just don't understand what there is to be upset about. I think Ilya Dragunov is off to a really good start so far on the main roster. I think people have their expectations way too high when it comes to people when they first hit that main roster. Or they just let their personal biases for certain people cloud their judgment. They really, really like somebody, and when they don't get booked in exactly the way that they want, they freak out over it. You know, I don't know if he's one of these people, but based on what you're telling me, it sounds like he might be. Need to get over themselves. Ufman Entertainment. Totally forgot to mention this at the Forbidden Door review earlier, but happy Bobby Bonilla Day. It's a lot of B's. From one Mets fan to another, this is not the $1,193,248.20 that Bobby gets every July 1st, but do enjoy the $22. Thank you. I'll take the 22. A million would be better, but I'll take the 22. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, Ufman, to you as well. NWO Matt 125 with the learning tree. Let's start this off with a learning tree and happy Bobby Bonilla Day. I'm always amazed at how many people are celebrating Bobby Bonilla Day. El Masse, Mercedes talking to Shane McMahon at the airport. What's next? Goldberg retiring at Wembley? I know Solomonster is excited. Yeah, if today was opposite day. Yeah, Mike Johnson reported that apparently Mercedes had a very chance meeting with Shane McMahon and bumped into him at LaGuardia Airport. And they did talk about AEW. It's one of those things where, how would he know that? How would he know that they talked about AEW unless Mercedes and her people leaked that they talked about AEW? So we know where he got the information from. David Thiering with the $50 super chat. Hey, Solid Monster, here's another Gunther bomb. I'm getting the vibes that Money in the Bank is going to be a solid show. If you don't talk about these already, got any predictions, or are you going to save them for tomorrow? Predictions are up right now, brother. Episode 868. You can find my Money in the Bank predictions right now. And yes, we will talk more about Money in the Bank on TNT, JD and myself, tomorrow night. We have much to discuss. Jerome Eugenio is Cross, now the new eater of pins. Now? Where have you been? He's been the eater of pins since he debuted on the main roster. Alex, Brother Solo. Can a trios-like title work in WWE? What three names can you see hold such hypothetical titles? I wouldn't do it. I mean, AEW has a lot of trios. In WWE, I don't think it's necessary. So I wouldn't do it. Justin G. Tavish wants Sal O the Monster to finish the story. Yeah, well, I want a Victoria's Secret model to fall in my lap. I guess Tavish and I will have to wait. Justin says, Hulk versus Brother Love versus Dude Love versus Jack Victory. Now that would be interesting. Hulk, Brother, Jack, and Dude in a fatal four-way. Griga says, cheers, Solo, with the $3. Cheers, Griga. Cheers to you, brother. Arabian Knight, 2000. Do you think we will see Bryan Danielson have one more match in WWE down the line, or will his last match be with AEW even when he goes part-time? I think he's going to be an AEW guy for the duration. He seems very happy there. I think Tony Khan has a lot of love and a lot of respect for him. He'll do anything he has to do to try to retain him as long as he can. I think he wants Bryan to be a part of the company for forever, even in a behind-the-scenes capacity. So as far as in-ring, I think he's going to finish his career in AEW. NWO Matt, thank you again for the learning tree. Ross Lawman, do you think Jimmy will call back to costing Jay the title against Roman to reunite the Usos, with Jimmy not wanting Jay to be corrupted as a tribal chief, which is what Solo Sikoa is at the moment, proving Jimmy was right? I gotta reread this because I'm confused. Do I think Jimmy will call back to costing Jay the title to reunite the Usos, with Jimmy not wanting Jay to be corrupted? Jay is not trying to be the tribal chief, though. Solo is. So Solo's their brother. If they want to put their differences aside to try to talk some sense into Solo and bring him back from the dark side, that's a story I could see. But we're way beyond, you know, Jimmy trying to convince... I mean, Jay is doing fine on his own. I mean, what does he have to save Jay from? Doesn't make any sense. Rizzo, I think we're slowly seeing our beloved Solid Monster go insane with all of the Brie mode and learning trees. No, when I start laughing maniacally, then you'll know. I can maintain my sanity. Once I lose my sanity, I'll be laughing like the Joker every stream. Then you'll know I'm just too far gone. The Juliet... You'll know I'm too far gone like Kevin Spacey on Wise Guys. There's an old TV reference for you. Mel Prophet. Character Mel Prophet. He was a fucking nut job. The Juliet says, the Creed brothers will be on Josh Barnett's Bloodsport event. I did announce that earlier. That is true. I think they're going to do well in Bloodsport. Seems like it would be right up their alley. Matt says, how is Punk babyface and Drew the heel? Drew is babyface in my opinion and Punk is a heel. I think a lot of people would agree with you. Still could be a double turn. By the time this feud is over, it could be flipped and there could be a double turn. Alex, the 23, assuming Solo pins Cody and Roman returns at the end of the match at SummerSlam, How would you book the ending of the match to protect both Solo and Cody and lead to the reemergence of both Roman and Heyman? I don't think you need to worry about protecting Solo. Solo can get pinned by Cody Rhodes. As far as how I do the finish, I don't know. You're asking me to book the SummerSlam finish right now at 1 o'clock in the morning? I have no idea. All I know is, if the plan is for Cody to wrestle Solo at SummerSlam, and that match, just as a match, it just doesn't excite me, but if that's what they're going to do, Solo should pin Cody in the six-man on Saturday. And then you go on to do the title match at SummerSlam. And you could have Heyman initially come out, you know, cause some kind of distraction. Look, we still don't have Jimmy. You know, we could have Jimmy and Roman come back at the same time. Maybe Jimmy comes out, you know, and everything kind of ends up leading to Solo losing, and then Roman comes out after the match, right? Jimmy and Heyman are surrounded, or Jimmy is being attacked. Then the music hits, and then Roman comes out. We may see them come back on the same night. Esru with the 12. If a WWE versus AEW pay-per-view, PLE, STD, or whatever it would be called, were to happen, what match would you like to see? I would love to see Toni Storm against Rhea. I love how you recommend Toni Storm against Rhea Ripley at the same time you mention an STD. I don't know what you're implying. Toni Storm against Rhea Ripley would be an excellent match. You know what would be even better? Rhea Ripley against a healthy Jamie Hayter. Unfortunately, both women are out right now injured, but you get them both back. Jamie Hayter and Rhea Ripley. There you go. That's the ticket right there. That's a stadium match. Nick Grasso. Dakota Kai breaks down and cries on her Twitch stream, begging for an opportunity only for Triple H to job her out again. Now there are two separate hashtags for her on Twitter. What is this Twitch? I didn't know nothing about this. She was crying on Twitch. Is there a link to this clip? I'm only first hearing about this now. She's crying on Twitter about not getting opportunities. This is the first I'm hearing about this. Daniel Malcolm. Clock strikes midnight on Bobby Bonilla Day. I am officially the big 3-1, although my knees feel 81. Glad to ring in a birthday with a live sound off. Hey, Daniel, thank you, and happy birthday to you. You're only as old as you feel. Always remember that. Hoffenheim, Chad should just ditch those losers and go with the Creeds. He will, in time. In due time. Samoan fan, can you explain the Jim Ross Dr. Heine skit? What was the whole point of that segment other than to just make fun of Jim Ross? Jim Ross had a cancer scare, as I recall, and was undergoing colon surgery to remove a good portion of his colon. I don't know if he actually had cancer or if it was a preemptive thing. So he was having this major, potentially life and death surgery. And Vince McMahon decided to mock him. Because Vince McMahon is a fucking piece of shit. Needs no other explanation. Retro KOH. Gable the Master Banker. Tonga with a face full of Heyman. And Dom riding Liv when his dad walks in. WWE to Brazzers after the Netflix deal. Gable the Master Banker? Oh, Master in the Bank. Hey, but what does that mean? I get the other two. Hoffenheim, everybody... Hey, you know what? That reminds me of that 1 year that Brazzers wished me... tweeted and wished me a happy birthday on Twitter. Yep. I didn't tweet them or anything. They wished the Solo Monster a happy birthday from Brazzers. Unbelievable. You never know who's listening to the podcast. Hoffenheim says, everybody of us needs some Hawk Tua. The Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett, I've had the thought of this scenario about Money in the Bank. Drew doesn't compete in the match. He gets taken out by Punk, similar to what happened to Punk on SmackDown. No, I don't see that happening. We've seen that in Elimination Chamber matches where famously, I think, what was it, Kofi? Someone got taken out by Edge before he got in the pod, and then Edge took a spot. I don't see that happening in Money in the Bank. David Thiering, follow up to my Gunther bomb. I was at work and did not see you post your Money in the Bank predictions on YouTube. I'll have to catch up another time. It's all there for you, man. It'll all be waiting for you. Hoffenheim, CM Punk will screw Drew, right? He needs to, if he wants it or not. CM Punk is going to make Drew McIntyre's night a miserable one on Saturday. Yes, you can bet your ass on that. Prince Vegeta, won't it be a waste if McIntyre wins the briefcase and loses it in the same night? Kind of feels like it buries McIntyre a bit if he loses another world title match. Makes him look like an idiot. Well, it makes him look like an idiot for taunting this guy so much, because what does he expect? So I don't argue on that, but no. It won't bury him, and I don't have an issue with them blowing through the briefcase if it makes sense, and to me that would make sense. I don't care if they have a briefcase that somebody is carrying around with them or not. I really don't. I've almost grown to hate the briefcase, to be honest with you. I just think it's such a fucking crutch that they use sometimes. I don't care. I don't care. If they want to blow through it, you still have the women's briefcase. So I have no issue with it. Rizzo, also hypothetically, Punk would screw over Seth if Priest retains, unless Seth pins Drew, obviously. All the more reason to do it. Right? Because you're going to get back to Seth and Punk at some point, right? We didn't get that match this year. That could be another reason for Seth to not like CM Punk. Justin G, also late. Happy Canada Day. Cue Bret Hart's theme. Is July 2nd Canada Day? Or July 1st? I assume it's July 2nd. Where's Steve? I don't think Steve is with us tonight. Steve's under the weather. Steve Mello, shout out to him. My favorite Canuck. He would know if today is Canada Day. Alex, with the NXT male roster not as stacked as before, do you see Trick Williams joining the main roster in 2026 rather than next year's WWE draft? No, I think we'll get Trick next year. Yeah, right now, if it feels like the men's roster is not as stacked as the women's, give it 6 months. I mean, they're always bringing in new talent. They're cycling in and out so many new talents. I still think Trick will be on the main roster at some point next year. Whether it's in the draft or not, I don't know. But I do think he'll be on the main roster at some point in 2025. Spider Sense, is anyone even vying for Liv's title? No. What's the point when they all know that Rhea's got it in the bag when she comes back? Hoffenheim, why does New York sports suck? Only the Yankees are winning. I'm a Knicks fan, by the way. I don't know. The Knicks did pretty well this year, didn't they? I thought the Knicks actually had a pretty good season. I mean, the Mets are a whole other... Don't even get me started. Even when they're doing well, I've just been conditioned to expect the worst. It's horrible. I have no faith. I've been burned so many times. Darth Panic. So does Drew go over Punk when they have their match at SummerSlam? Yes. Drew McIntyre, I think, wins the first match. Isaac. What do you think about the Creed brothers being announced for Bloodsport later this month? I think they'll fit in very well. Jarrett Rodriguez with the 1999. Hey, Jarrett, thank you. What do you think the ceiling of success is for Ludwig Kaiser? He's a good in-ring worker, and his promo work is not half bad either. Still, I think a potential setback for him is his extremely slim build. Do you feel the same? I think Kaiser has gotten himself into tremendous shape. I don't think his physique is going to hurt him at all. We've had guys smaller than him as world heavyweight champion. You know, his ceiling, though, that's interesting. Because I could see him with the Intercontinental or the U.S. title at some point. I just don't see him as the world heavyweight champion. I don't see them giving him the chance to be world heavyweight champion. I'd love to be wrong. But if you ask me, do I think Ludwig Kaiser is a future world champion? I don't see it. I don't see them doing it. We've got a $1.99 here from, boy, we'll call him you. Hey, you. Says, hey, is John Cena for the Batista? I'm so confused. You're not the only one. Thank you, you. Devin from New Jersey. Is KO the Bloodline's greatest rival? The Bloodline's greatest rival. That's a good question. I mean, he'd have to be up there. Think of all the matches he had with Roman. He had at least 3 pay-per-view matches with Roman for the title. Now he's feuding with them again. Yeah, he probably is. I mean, Brock and Roman feuded just a ridiculous number of times, but a lot of that wasn't Bloodline, you know? That was pre-Bloodline. Ross Lawman, I mean, Jimmy cost Jay the title at SummerSlam last year. The excuse was he did it to stop Jay from being the next corrupted tribal chief, as Solo is now, and it helps reunite the Usos, as Jimmy really did save Jay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So maybe, I mean, is what you're suggesting that they reunite in large part to work together to try to save Solo? Is that what I'm kind of getting out of this here? Hoffenheim says, Solomonster as a porn star on Brazzers. Or did you have a membership there? I did not have a membership there. So it was just a weird thing. Not only did they wish me a happy birthday, but they actually knew I liked the 1992 Royal Rumble because they included a Ric Flair 92 Royal Rumble gif. So it was somebody who obviously is a fan of the show who ran the account, I guess. Like, they didn't just, like, know my name. Like, they knew stuff about me. So that was like, I remember looking at that. I was like, wow, okay. I don't know where that came from. Prince Vegeta, is it just me, or since Triple H took over, the world champions don't wrestle as much on TV, male and female? Seth Rollins did, you know, he was kind of the workhorse. I guess that's kind of how he built himself. So Rollins did. Gunther was almost exclusively for a while there, defending the Intercontinental title on TV in main events. So I wouldn't say that that's always the case. And I can also see the other side of it, that it keeps the champions more special and title matches more special. So I kind of like it, but it's not as if we don't ever get title matches on TV. We do. You know, we just don't get them all the time, which I think is fine. Justin G, July 1st was Canada Day. July 2nd is Brett's birthday. Of course. Yes. How could I forget? It is officially Brett the Hitman Hart's birthday, although I don't know how old he is. I'm sure he's in his mid-60s. I just don't know the number. Happy birthday to the GOAT. Happy birthday to the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will. Base Beerus says the Radicals were better than the Elite. I'm not going to argue. Morton with the 9. If the Learning Tree was in WWE, oh God help us, would it be more accepted? Like the List. People need to loosen up on the Learning Tree gimmick. Stop taking wrestling so seriously. It's okay to disagree. Hey, brother, you can like whatever the fuck you want, man. No one's stopping you. You can love the Learning Tree. The Learning Tree, I think, as a gimmick on television, is shit. He's trying way too hard to be funny. Whereas the List and a lot of the other stuff that he did in WWE was entertaining. It was funny. I don't find this funny. I like to laugh. in wrestling. This gimmick is no good. It's bad television. If you like it, that's great. I don't know what else to tell you. I think it's shit. M. Mills, again, thank you for the 25. Aaron Ruggiero with the 10. I've seen a lot of hate for Damian Priest. I may be in the minority, but I like him as champion, although I want Seth against Gunther at SummerSlam. What do you think of Damian as champion and of him overall? I like Damian Priest, and I think that he has been a good champion so far. He doesn't have that marquee name. I don't know if he ever will be looked at in the same way as a Seth Rollins. Rollins has been around for years, though. You know, Priest has only been in this position for a few months. And I don't think he's going to have that title for that much longer. I hope this is not the only chance he has to be a champion. I do think, especially for a bigger guy, I think he's actually very good. He's had some very good matches. But his star is not at that level. So when you hear his name mentioned, you don't necessarily think of him as being the one to close the show. Because he's just not, he doesn't have that name recognition yet. He doesn't have that level of star power. Base Beerus says, they need to start training managers at the WWE Performance Center. I agree. I think it was a lost art for so long, and they need to find the next generation of great managers. I still think it's a lost art. Base Beerus says Brazzers is watching now. They might be. Hi, Brazzers. What's going on? K-Dog's Kennel. Am I the only one who wants to see Randy Orton win or lose Money in the Bank? Nail Cody with an RKO, setting up Cody and Orton for SummerSlam. I think that's what almost everybody wants. I think that's what I just talked about last week. I said that RKO out of nowhere is going to hit like crack. And if it were me booking, I would love to see Cody and Randy at SummerSlam. But if the plan is to bring Roman Reigns back, then we're going to get Cody in solo, because that's going to be a much bigger moment. It's all about building to the return of Roman Reigns. So if that's the date of his return, Cody and Orton is going to be completely overshadowed if you do it any other way. You almost have to do Cody and Solo, or Cody and someone from the Bloodline to set that up, unless you want Cody to work second from the top, which I don't think he should be doing. Ross Lawman. I did not have a Brazzers account then. Interesting. Also, we'll send email about Jay and Jimmy Uso, as it may cost me a lot to explain in Super Chat. Yeah. Maybe it's better to email. So I was still a little confused. But thank you, Ross. Aaron with the 10. Aaron, thank you. I was at Dynamite in Buffalo this week, and the Learning Tree segment sucked. A lot of people in my section, including me, were chanting, "Please retire," to Jericho. Oh, we heard you. I heard those chants. Jericho just doesn't have it anymore. You know, it's funny, like in the ring, like, Jericho has his moments, but it's just, I'm just so tired of it. He just needs to go away for 6 months, you know, come back, kind of hit the reset button. If anybody would benefit, I think, from disappearing for a while, it would be Jericho. Maybe there's a good Fozzy tour that he needs to go on soon. Hoffenheim, which porn star female is the GOAT? Question for everybody. There you go. It's all open to the chat. Have at it. Have at it, guys. I was a Shannon Tweed guy back in the day. Just because, you know, you'd be flipping around on those cable stations and you'd come across like Showtime 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. It would either be something like a Mario Van Peebles movie, or it would be something involving Shannon Tweed. And if it was involving Shannon Tweed, I would stop and I would watch the rest of the movie. until I fell asleep. But we're going back years now. That's like the 90s. Base Beerus, Lord of the Ring, Return of the Tribal Chief. And Dom Joseph, I see Batista in Braun Breaker. Yeah, I mean, maybe in the face a little bit, but I don't see it. Batista was just a freak. He had that freaky physique. He's just a big guy. You know, Braun Breaker is really not that big, you know, relative to some of the other people on the roster. Like, you put him in the ring with Drew McIntyre, I feel like Braun would look small next to him, right? But he's got that explosiveness. He's got that intensity. That's what makes him so fun to watch. Oh my God, Tara Patrick. There's a name I haven't heard in like 20 years. Holy shit. Tara Patrick. Oh my God. Oh man. Yee with the $3. Hey Solo, great podcast as usual this week. Thank you, sir. Just wanted to say it's extremely jarring not to hear I Am the Learning Tree every 2 minutes. I'm saving you. Believe me, you're better off not hearing it every 2 minutes. So I put a pause between them. Makes it a little more tolerable. Oz and Glorious, when am I going to shoot my shot with Mariah May? You know, first you guys got me shooting my shot with Liv Morgan when she said she was single, and I told you that she follows me. Now you're trying to link me up with Mariah May. You got to pick a lane here, you know? I think Mariah May, I mean, she's occupied right now. She's got two beautiful women that she's apparently very fond of. I don't think she's interested in someone like me. I wouldn't be interested in me either if I had the choice of Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. The hell does she need me for? I'm just going to ruin the whole thing. 464 likes. That's good. You know what would be great? If we can get to 500. Can we get to 500 here? I don't know. Hit that like button. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Speaking of the world heavyweight champion, there he is. Damian Priest. Maybe we'll pick Damian Priest and be the booker. We'll find out in the main event when we get there. Tag team Be the Booker. This is our second time, by the way, doing Be the Booker. We did Be the Booker this afternoon during the Forbidden Door stream. We begin with Drew McIntyre and Sheamus. Just saw them in the main event tonight on this show. Drew McIntyre and Sheamus. We're off to a great start here. Banger after banger after banger. McIntyre and Sheamus against Los Conquistadors and El Torito. Look at El Torito. Oh man. Didn't Drew McIntyre take a bump? Like a big table bump in a WLC match that these guys were involved in? Right? Because it was El Torito and it was Hornswoggle, right? And McIntyre. That was like first of all, WLC was actually very entertaining. But it's amazing to think of where Drew McIntyre was then, and you look at the position that he's in now. Look at what he was doing back then as compared to now. It's a pretty incredible transformation, I would say. He did, right? Yeah, he did feud with these guys. Man. All right, women's Be the Booker. There are no porn stars in women's Be the Booker. Just for the record. Not that I'm aware of, anyway. We begin with, oh my goodness, Mina and Mariah want to make this a four-way. I almost feel like I talked it into existence. I was just talking about them, and look at these two. Look at these dudes. You're talking about me shooting my shot with Mariah May. Give me a break. As if I stand a chance here. Look at this. Look at Mina and Mariah here. So they want to make this a four-way. All right. Well, then I guess that's what we're going to have to do. We're booking ourselves a fatal four-way. How do you like that? So you never know what you're going to land on here and be the booker. You just never know. See, I'm all excited. Look at that. There you go. Oh, man. All right. We begin with Hikaru Shida, the former three-time AEW Women's World Champion. Shida, it's funny enough, Shida is wrestling Mariah May in the next round of the Owen Hart tournament. So we are starting out with Hikaru Shida. We got three more to go. We got three more to go. Oh, boy. Nikki Bella and Hikaru Shida comprise half the field here in this fatal four-way match. Nikki Bella and Hikaru Shida is going to beat the living piss out of Nikki Bella. I have a feeling with that kendo stick. We have the man, Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch and Hikaru Shida, that'd be a pretty good match. All right, we got one more spot to complete the fatal four-way. It's pretty good so far. It's pretty good so far. And we conclude with the professor, Serena Deeb. There's more good than bad in that match. Serena Deeb, Hikaru Shida, Becky Lynch, and Nikki Bella. Maybe they could all gang up on Nikki, take her out of the match. And we end up with a triple threat. What do you think about that? All right, main event time. Our second main event of the day that we are booking. Where, oh, where will it land? We just belled a Bella in a match, I know. Am I feeling okay? All right, we begin with the United States champion, Mr. Crypto Zoo himself, Logan Paul, is kicking us off here in Be the Booker, in our main event. Logan Paul's had a few main events so far in WWE, against Cody Rhodes, against Roman Reigns. And now, who will his latest opponent be? It should be LA Knight. Logan Paul is going to face the Indie God, the Deathmatch King, Matt Cardona. Oh, Logan Paul gonna bleed. I like that match. I do. Be well. Stay safe. Thank you for hanging out with me on a Monday night. Have yourselves a great Tuesday. Join me, join us on the other channel for TNT tomorrow night. And if you missed it, episode 868 of The Sound Off. 2 hours up for your listening pleasure right now on Spreaker, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your audio podcasts. I'll see you guys on Wednesday night after Dynamite. Take care, guys.